Welcome to Between the Rows, where you get to hear the stories behind the stories in Canada's leading farm publications.
Hello and welcome to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Dave Bedard. Well, on top of China's boycott of Canadian canola comes an unexpected broadside to the Canadian livestock and meat sectors. China is asking Canada to stop granting export certificates of pork and beef exports after the discovery of some pork with traces of ractopamine led to the discovery of counterfeit veterinary health certificates. Only this time we're not waiting for China to come forward with the proof. The CFIA is already confirming this was the case. The question is, what does this all mean for Canada's livestock producers? And to talk about that, we've got Alexis Stockford here from the Manitoba Cooperator. Alexis, hi and welcome back to Between the Rows.
Hi, Dave. It's great to be here.
Well, let's start with the discovery of ractopamine. It's been a while since we've even discussed this as an issue in Canada. Just to recap, what's at issue here?
Well, like, and the reason that we haven't discussed ractopamine a whole lot is that in the pork sector, at least, this is an additive that, even though it is approved in Canada, that the industry has kind of collectively decided that they're not going to use, specifically because they're trying to court business in places like China that don't allow it. And so for people who are not familiar with this additive, what it basically is it's an additive that increases the efficiency and the energy uptake from the feed. And so the result of that is an increased leanness in the meat, some more efficient rates of weight gain, some feed efficiency. And that's sort of the rationale for the use of this product. And it is allowed in the rest of North America. It's allowed in the U.S. It's allowed in Mexico. But there are about 160 countries, including countries in the European Union and in China, that either ban or restrict this product. And so basically what's at stake here is our trade with China. Our trade with China, our pork trade with China, is reliant on us being able to say, we do not use ractopamine, that the meat that we're sending them is ractopamine-free. And the pork industry, when you talk to them, says, you know, we have this ractopamine-free certification program, and it's in place in our federal processing facilities or federally inspected processing facilities. And we make a lot of effort to make sure that the pigs that are being processed and the meat that is going to China has never been within sniffing distance of ractopamine.
Mm-hmm. Now, on top of this, of course, we've also got these allegations of fake paperwork. What do we know about that?
In short, very little. What we do know is like you said, there was a case, or the Chinese say that there was a case of ractopamine found in a pork shipment. And as a result of that, the CFIA launched an investigation. And the result of that investigation was that they found and they acknowledged that there was export permits that were fake. They were fraudulent. And after that, very, very few details have been released past that. The reins of the investigation have basically been handed over to the RCMP. And the RCMP at this point, because it's an ongoing investigation, will only say that the investigation exists. There have been no details.
And that's interesting, too. I mean, there's going to be the question also of where this meat was even coming from. Now, there was the case just recently where Frigo Royal, the company out of Saint-Hyacinthe, Quebec, that had its export certificate suspended for discovery of traces of ractopamine. They're a co-packing company out of Quebec. They were authorized for inspection of meat products imported from South America. But do we even know yet whether this case with the fake certificates or anything has anything even to do with them?
No, that's if you look at a lot of the media coverage, the first media coverage basically named that company as the source of the CFIA investigation. But if you look at the media coverage since China asked the CFIA to stop giving out export permits, that name has since kind of been dropped. And if you talk to the industry and if you talk to the Canadian government, the answer is no. In fact, they're not convinced. They're not convinced that this shipment even came from Canada. And the fact that it is ractopamine is actually, they say, is a big flag that it maybe didn't come from Canada, specifically because this is a product that they say, you know, we don't use. Mm-hmm. And we make a lot of effort to make sure that there's no cross-contamination. So in answer to your question, no, we're not sure where it came from. That's sort of the crux of the RCMP investigation. And until they give out any details, we're kind of in a holding pattern about that.
Mm-hmm. So now with the holding pattern that we're in, what are Canada's hog producers being told? We'd been seeing all sorts of discussion about ramping up production again here in Canada. Is this even advisable now?
You know, that's actually a question that I asked the Canadian Pork Council. They basically asked them, like, you know, like China is a big part of pork trade. Like it's one of your biggest, like China's one of your biggest customers. So is there concern about Canadian oversupply at this point? And they were very, they didn't want to go there necessarily. They basically said, no, China is a big customer, but it's not the only biggest customer. And they're basically telling producers to hold the course, basically.
And China's plan to halt Canadian meat is also affecting beef, which it seems has taken that industry a little bit by surprise as well.
Yeah, and you know, I think that's an important point, because if you look at the conversation right now, it has been very pork focused. But at the same time, you're right, beef is very much a part of this conversation, and this has absolutely sideswiped them as well. And when you talk to, you know, the Manitoba beef producers, when you talk to the Canadian Cattlemen's Association, they're in an equal scramble, just like the Canadian Pork Council. And the message you're getting from them right now is basically, you know, we're letting due process take its course, and what, they're in a holding pattern too, and so there's not much that they can say until we get some more details of this investigation.
Mm-hmm. And the Canadian Cattlemen's Association has gone so far as to say it's unclear why beef products have even been included in the suspension in the first place, that they're seeking clarification from Chinese officials. And on top of that, too, I mean, relative to pork, I mean, beef is not necessarily the huge player in the Chinese market. It's I believe it's 2.6% of Canada's total beef exports are going to China.
Yeah, you're right. The pork element of this story has sort of dominated, specifically because they are. China is a much bigger player in the pork market than it is in the beef market right now.
Mm-hmm. Now, lastly, this whole thing with the fake certificates, I mean, this isn't a good look for Canada. Is there, can we expect any blowback from other export markets as a result?
Everyone's being very careful about that right now. Right now, you have the federal government, which has basically said this is an issue that is only affecting pork export certificates to China. The Canadian Pork Council is basically saying that this is an issue that right now is isolated between Canada and China. And when you talk to, like, I was in conversation with the Manitoba beef producers, and they basically said that they pointed basically to their traceability program. And the beef industry certainly did make a lot of changes after BSE and sort of ramped up their traceability. And they basically are saying, they're basically pointing to that system and hoping that those improvements will maintain the reputation in the global meat market right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll certainly be keeping an eye on this story in the weeks and months to come. Alexis Stockford, thanks very much for your time, and thanks for coming on Between the Rows.
Dave, it's always great to be here.
Take care. Alexis Stockford is a reporter for the Manitoba Cooperator. You're listening to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Dave Bedard. We're still waiting on both Canada and the United States to ratify NAFTA 2.0, the trade pact the Americans call the U.S.-Mexico-Canada Agreement, or which we call the Canada-U.S.-Mexico Agreement, although the only country that has actually ratified it so far is Mexico. We're hearing now that the agreement reached between the three countries is going to help deal with a long-standing trade irritant as far as U.S. grain growers are concerned, and to discuss that, we've got Alan Dawson here from the Manitoba Cooperator. Alan, hi, and welcome back to Between the Rows.
Oh, hi, Dave, thanks.
First, let's talk about the specific thorn in U.S. grain growers' side. This goes back a lot farther than just our current Three Amigos, since our current Three Amigos took office, doesn't it?
That's right. It's been going on for a few years now, and really, popped up on my radar in April of 2016 while I was at a meeting in Washington, D.C., actually a journalist's meeting, and we were at the White House, and some of the administration there dealing with trade raised it because there were other Canadian reporters at that meeting, and I was kind of surprised at the time. I knew that we had issues or had regulations dealing with American wheat, but I thought that sort of post NAFTA or because of NAFTA that some of those restrictions had been eliminated, especially for varieties that were were registered in Canada. American varieties grow in the U.S., but registered in Canada. But it turned out that wasn't the case, that there were still roadblocks or impediments to American wheat coming in.
So what did they want to know from you guys, though?
Well, they were, I don't think it was so much what they wanted to know from us. They were just, you know, going over trade irritants with Canada, and this is one that came up. And at the time, it struck me as being a bit of an oddity, because with the currency difference and the trade routes, I didn't think a lot of American wheat really wanted to flow north, and that is the case when you talk to people in the Canadian Grain Commission as well as elevator companies. But for the Americans, it's kind of I would say it's symbolic, if nothing else. But from their perspective, they see it as this restriction as something that would discourage Canadian elevator companies from buying American wheat.
So, what do the current regulations actually do as far as American wheat is concerned?
Right, that's a good point. The Western Canadian farmers will be familiar with our registration system, which requires new varieties of wheat that are grown commercially here to be registered, and that's done after at least 2 years of trials, and usually three, where three things are assessed. For their merit, the quality, so they have to, new variety wheats have to meet the standard for quality in the class they're intended for, and then they also have to meet certain agronomic characteristics. Those are things like days to maturity, heights, standability, those sorts of things. And then the third one being resistant to or tolerant to certain plant diseases. So if you get through all those things, then you're registered, good to go. And with the American wheats, even varieties that are American and registered here in Canada, for example, Faller and Prosper are a couple of Canadian Northern Hard Red Springs in that class, but they were developed in the United States, and they are registered in Canada now. But if an American farmer delivered that to a Canadian elevator today, Faller or Prosper wheat, the elevator would not be able to give that wheat an official Canadian Grain Commission grade. So in other words, not a number one CNHR, and that's because of our current rules that say in order to get a CGC grade, and it applies equally to Canadian varieties. So if a Canadian was growing an unregistered wheat, they wouldn't be able to get an official CGC grade either. And of course, the Americans want that changed. And if we ratify the new CUSMA U.S. Mexico Canada trade agreement, then the CGC regulations around American wheat coming in will be changed. It's part of C-100, which is built, to ratify CUSMA in Canada. And, those, if it goes through, then American wheats that are registered in Canada will be allowed to get a CGC grade.
And another trade irritant therefore bites the dust. So now, how much of a problem this poses for the Canadian grain industry? I guess it depends on who you ask. Is that correct?
That's right. You know, when you talk to elevator companies, they say really there's no impediment. If an American drives a truckload of grain up to a Canadian elevator, the Canadian elevator can buy it. They can't give it an official CGC grade, but it's an open market, so a willing seller and a willing buyer can work out an agreement to on a price and so on, and then the the wheat coming in can be dealt with on a specifications basis. The Americans say, though, that, and this is correct, that the Canadian elevators are obliged to, when they're exporting wheat from Canada, if they have wheat from another country, it has to be disclosed. So the Americans argue that, that this in itself would be maybe something that would make Canadian elevators reluctant to buy the American wheat because they'd have to presumably perhaps segregate it and this sort of thing. So if C-100 gets ratified, then that impediment should be removed. Now, there are some people, the National Farmers Union argues that that this could undermine our system, that the Americans are just trying to ride on Canada's coattails, as it were, when it comes to, you know, high-quality wheat, this sort of thing. The NFU feels that this potentially could undermine our quality control. But, you know, I guess from the other side, the Canadian government feels, and I think the elevator companies feel as well, that if the variety is registered and in Canada, even if it's grown in, let's say, North Dakota, it should be, you know, if it creates a number one, it should be the same quality, intrinsic quality, as product grown in Canada. So it shouldn't hurt our reputation.
Mm-hmm. So here we've got the federal government saying this hasn't been a problem, but to U.S. growers it is, so we'll deal with it, even though we haven't felt it necessary to do so until now. And then you've got the industry saying it hasn't been a problem, but it needs to be fixed, and the NFU saying it's a big problem to if we allow it, so we shouldn't be doing it.
That's right. If everybody could follow that. And in the past, there were legislation, even going as far back as the previous government, Harper government, had some amendments to the Grain Act that died on the order paper before the last election, that had that legislation gone through, would have dealt with this trade irritant. And another thing I should maybe point out, and of course, things can change, but right now and in the immediate past, when I talk to people in the grain trade, they say even if American wheat registered in Canada had been able to come into Canada, the view was that there wouldn't be a lot of it flowing north because of the currency difference and the trade patterns. You don't have to go very far south, and you're kind of in a different catchment area, south and east or west. You know, some of it would maybe go to Minneapolis and maybe down to the Gulf, and then some flows to the Pacific Northwest. So in terms of being flooded with American wheat, the trade up here doesn't think that that's likely to be the case, but I suppose anything's possible in the future. You know, currencies fluctuate and that sort of thing. And so who knows? Maybe in the future, more American wheat will want to flow north. But right now, most Canadians see it's more of a symbolic thing, you know. And the Americans, if they do get access, it'll again just be for varieties that are registered in Canada. And the U.S. Wheat Associates have been arguing, lobbying for this change, have told me that they're okay with that, just going that far, because Canadian farmers would be treated no different than American farmers. In other words, if a Canadian farmer is growing an unregistered variety, that farmer cannot get an official grade. In fact, the elevator is obliged to give the grade, the lowest grade in the intended class, if it's an unregistered variety. Very same thing with American wheat. So if we make the change, then farmers on both sides of the border will be treated exactly the same.
Mm-hmm. So lastly, now, when it comes to, just for those of us who haven't necessarily been following along that closely, how close are we to even ratifying this thing, this the whole trade deal and this accompanying legislation?
Well, you know, it's a bit of a guessing game. I think you've probably seen some of the reports, as I have, that Canada's ready to ratify and wants to ratify, but Canada doesn't want to get too far ahead of the Americans. There's a pressure on both sides of the border. I think Canada would like to ratify before the fall election in October. And in the United States, Donald Trump wants a win, and he sees this trade deal as a win. And he would like to see it ratified by Congress before they break for summer in August. And, of course, wants it done well before the 2020 presidential election. So there is some pressure, but Canada, and Prime Minister Trudeau is on the record as saying that if necessary, he could recall Parliament this summer to ratify the bill if, that was necessary or in keeping on track with the American schedule. So I think it's kind of in the U.S. hands, and Canada will be trying to be in step with the U.S., not maybe getting too far ahead, but also telling the Americans that, hey, and Congress in particular, the House of Representatives, Canada is not interested in renegotiating. They'll have to take it or leave it, and that's the message the president is giving Congress as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll look forward to seeing what happens there in the coming weeks and months. Alan Dawson, thanks very much for your time, and thanks for coming on Between the Rows.
You're welcome. Thanks a lot, Dave.
Alan Dawson is a reporter for the Manitoba Cooperator at Miami, Manitoba. You're listening to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Dave Bedard. Well, Statistics Canada's latest report on expected acreage for this coming crop year seems to have come largely within trade expectations, with Canadian farmers seeding fewer canola and durum acres and more barley and oats. To discuss that and other issues affecting markets this week, we've got Bruce Burnett here from Markets Farm. Bruce, hi, and welcome back to Between the Rows.
Hey, it's good to be here.
Well, let's start, of course, with the Stats Canada report. What kind of ripple did this actually make in markets?
Well, really, as you said, there was not a lot of change from what people were expecting, so it really didn't change the markets all that much. We saw large reduction in canola acreage, down about 8%, so close to 21 million acres this year, just a bit under. A decrease in durum, down closer to 21%. So two big reductions there. I think the surprise was that in the March intentions, we thought that that area was going to be made up for by the spring wheat. This report showed a little less spring wheat planting than the farmers had indicated in March. And so the overall wheat area is actually dropping just ever so slightly this year from last year. What's making up the difference? Well, barley's the chief beneficiary, up about 14% this year. We're also seeing increases in peas. That was up close to 20% this year on planted area, at least anyway. So you're seeing some replacement for some of the canola in those northern growing areas, going from canola into peas and barley. So I think this all makes sense. Of course, we really didn't have that much in terms of weather trials and tribulations through seeding this year. For the most part, we were dry, which I think did maybe play into some farmers' decisions, but obviously we did get the crop planted. So there's no real controversies, I think, about the Canadian sown area numbers right now.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the U.S., in the meantime, the USDA just recently put out its own expectations for the coming crop here, and that seems to have hit the corn market in particular like a bit of an anvil.
Yes, well, and part of this is due to the fact that the numbers that we've seen to date have been from the World Outlook Board at USDA on the corn, and it's more or less just a working estimate that they are putting in, and the trade is accepting those numbers. This was the first surveyed numbers that we saw since the March Planting Intentions report, and it surprised everyone because it came in at about 92 million acres, just 91.7 million acres, whereas the trade had been expecting a number closer to 85, 86, maybe 87 million planted acres this year. Mm-hmm. Again, you have to go back to the methodology, though. This is a surveyed result, much like Stats Can. And in terms of asking the farmer the question at the beginning of June, how much area do you intend to plant to corn? Well, at that time, corn prices were on the rise. If they had a break in the weather, they certainly would have planted corn. They just probably didn't get to it. So USDA has already said we're going to resurvey those numbers. We'll release them on August the 1st. So our August production estimate, which is the next surveyed estimate that's going to be coming at us on crop production, is going to have a reliable area base. There are a lot of trade pundits, including myself, that think that probably we won't see the end of this till probably in October or the November estimates, because even though they might get the planted area right, how much of the harvested area is going to be actually harvested and in the bin at the end of the harvest this year is going to be the real number that people will be interested in.
Has there been sort of silver second thought coming back after the initial drop after the report came out?
Well, the market certainly did take a tumble. It's solidified right now, still above $4. In fact, the December is about $4.20, which is a technical resistance level. We'll have to see in the coming days and weeks whether or not it punches through that. But I think the corn is still a very solid, on solid fundamental grounds, because a lot of people don't believe this USDA number that came out. So that's eventually people are just going to be trading on what they feel the crop size is going to be rather than necessarily this number.
Now, you talked before about just how we didn't really have too much of a problem this year with weather, at least as far as seeding was concerned. How much of a weather, in terms of its effect on markets, how much is weather playing a role right now?
Well, certainly, if you look at the corn and soybean oilseed markets, weather is almost everything in them. And the market's just waiting for any signs of either too hot conditions during corn pollination, which will occur mostly in August this year, or dryness developing, those types of things, because the supply balance situation for corn in the U.S. is going to be tight this year. So it's going to be, everything's going to hinge on that. For the other commodities, in Canada, we were starting a weather market, but then really we had some rains here in the last couple of weeks. And although that's not going to be enough for the growing season, it certainly allayed fears. And we saw canola drop back because of that. So we're currently right now in the weather market, and whether you've been getting good weather or bad weather is sort of seems to be moving the markets the most nowadays, at least anyway.
Mm-hmm. And lastly, of course, there was also the G20 meeting in Japan, and there was a meeting, I gather, between President Trump and the leadership from China, basically reiterating that they're going to work on a trade deal and that there's not there's no further action going to be taken at this time. The trade seems to have stifling a bit of a yawn there, though.
Well, it's sort of a story that we've heard before. China mm-hmm. has promised to buy lots of agricultural commodities, and they have bought some, but really not exceptional amounts. And there's never any numbers around this in terms of how many imports they're going to have. Of course, for Canadians, the more important situation is this Huawei affair with, again, the executive in Vancouver under arrest for extradition to the U.S. That's playing into our trade matrix quite a bit with China. And again, last week we saw the ban of meat imports into China from Canada. Mm-hmm. So really, from that G20 summit, we didn't see any progress on that front. And that's probably the thing that Canadian farmers need to probably be more focused on.
Mm-hmm. But of course, with the crop already in the ground, there's only so much they can really focus on that, as opposed to the weather.
Yes, that's right. The weather still is the supreme determiner of what kind of crop we're going to have this year, and the amount of grain that we'll grains and oilseeds that we will have to market.
Mm-hmm. Well, we look forward to seeing what happens there in the coming weeks and months. Bruce Burnett, thanks very much for your time, and thanks for coming on Between the Rows. Bruce Burnett is Director of Markets and Weather with Markets Farm. That's all we have for this week, but we'll be back again in another week with more from the Glacier Farm Media family of publications. You're listening Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Dave Bedard.
Between the Rows is a production of Glacier Farm Media, Canada's leading farm publisher.
We'd love to hear what you think of the show and invite you to send your comments to btr@farmmedia.com or visit us at membersgetmore.ca and sign up today.